In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
You need something meaningful to set against suffering. That's what you have to set against suffering, not happiness. Sometimes you don't have, that's not an option sometimes. Happiness is like, you know, I don't think I had any happiness at all for 3 years, pretty much.
And what is
it? It was dire. Well, my wife, she spent a year hovering on the brink of death in a variety of different ways. Before that, my daughter had catastrophic health problems, which have mostly resolved. And then I got extremely ill, so we've been in, and at the same time, we were facing social pressure of like an unparalleled magnitude, people trying to, you know, bring this enterprise to a halt, I suppose. That's probably the right way to think about it. Most of that time, I was hoping that I would die. I've been grateful for the good things that have happened to me, but I don't think I was grateful enough before just for mundane normality, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you think you don't have everything you could have, and perhaps that's true, but if you can sit down and breathe, there's lots of people who don't have that.
Life is brutally difficult and sometimes unbearably brutally difficult. And you can see the progressives playing with that notion. It's warped into this sense of victimization, but it does reflect some understanding of the underlying tragic reality of life. And so it's good to get that right out on the table to begin with. Say, well, you're miserable, you have your reasons. And they might be deep reasons. But if you let the misery demoralize you and make you bitter and cynical and cowardly and make you withdraw, then, first of all, that's a failure in the highest sense on your part, and all it's going to do is make everything worse. And then you might think, well, what do you have to respond to that? How do you respond to that catastrophe and challenge? And the answer is, terrible as things are, there's a lot more to you than you can possibly imagine. And that if you face those things forthrightly and with some faith and courage, then you can have the adventure of your life and prevail even over catastrophe. People have difficult lives, and that life itself is full of suffering, and that we make it worse with our own voluntary stupidity and willful blindness and even malevolence. And that's what we contend with, you know, we contend with suffering and malevolence. And as a consequence, it's necessary to pursue something that has substantive meaning to set against that. And I think that it's self-evident, once it's articulated anyways, that most people find deep meaning in their life as a consequence, not of their rights or their impulsive pleasures even, but as a consequence of bearing responsibility for themselves, for their family, for their community. And the heavier the responsibility, the better.
Well, Professor Stephen Hawking, before he died, gave me his last television interview, and he said that the biggest threat to the future of mankind was when artificial intelligence learned to self-design. What do you think the biggest threat to mankind is?
Narcissistic compassion. Now, AIs, you know, it's a threat too, but If we had our act together ethically, it's possible that AI could become a useful servant rather than a tyrannical master. You don't want to automate your tyrannical masters.
The ideal that you're observing that makes you jealous and resentful is in large part an illusion that's created by your own mind. You know, I can give you just one example. It's like, I know a fair number of extremely wealthy people, and I tell you, man, they have a burden of responsibility that would crush me, would crush the typical person. They're just working flat out, like 90 hours a week. You know, they have their money, and they have their status, and that's not nothing. But don't be thinking that there isn't a price to be paid for that. You know, they don't see their families, they're often divorced, they don't see their children grow up, and they don't have time off. Now, there are wealthy, what would you call, playboy type.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/affirmations or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/affirmations.
I suppose who live out the dreams of wealth of a foolish 14-year-old, but they're not that common. And you have to be careful of what you're jealous of because you don't really know what it is. And then the other thing to understand, you're quite different from other people, and you shouldn't be comparing yourself to them because they're not like you. You know, they don't have your family. They don't have your temperament. They don't have your troubles. They don't have your abilities. The only person that has those is you. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday and not to who someone else is today. And see, that's a game you can win because you could be a little better today than you were yesterday.
Most of the time when you're discussing something that needs to be discussed, everybody's actually rather upset about it. You know, if you're actually talking right. about something sure. important, right? Because why talk otherwise, unless you're just shooting the breeze? But if there's an issue at hand that has to be discussed, then people are already upset and they have different viewpoints. And the offensiveness, in some sense, is built into that. And you know that because if you have a family, if you have a wife, if you have an intimate relationship, and you're discussing something that's difficult, the probability that you're not going to offend each other if you're actually having the conversation is zero. And so you don't have to think unless you have a problem. And if you have a problem, then when you think, you're going to offend people. And so what, are we not going to think? That seems like a bad idea.
Liberals are higher in openness, that's trait creativity, and lower in conscientiousness, especially orderliness. And that seems to be because they believe, or their niche is an informational niche. They believe that the free flow of information is worth the risk. So that'd be the free flow of people across borders, the free flow of ideas across borders, the free flow of concepts across categories. They'd rather that the borders were permeable. Now, the conservatives are low in openness and high in conscientiousness, especially orderliness, and they take the opposite tack. They think, well, yeah, there's danger in too much openness. There's danger in borders that are too permeable. Things can change too fast. Entire societies can become destabilized, and everyone can end up not knowing which way is up. And the thing is that both of those attitudes are correct. It depends on the time. You know, sometimes things are changing so fast that everybody's knocked off their feet, and things are falling apart. And sometimes things are so rigid that there isn't any new water flowing and everything's ground to a halt. You need liberals because now and then the right thing to do is to come up with something new. And you need conservatives because now and then the right thing to do is to do what everybody has always done. And the reason you need political dialogue is so that the liberals and the conservatives can continue to argue about which of those solutions is appropriate right now.
The game of dividing human beings up by their group identity ends in disaster, no matter who plays it and no matter what the reasons are.
Adopt a stance of ready engagement with the world and to reflect that in your posture. And the reason that I write about lobsters is because there's this idea that hierarchical structures are a sociological construct of the Western patriarchy. And that is so untrue that it's almost unbelievable. And I use the lobster as an example because the lobster, we divulged from lobsters in evolutionary history about 350 million years ago, common ancestor. And lobsters exist in hierarchies and they have a nervous system attuned to the hierarchy. And that nervous system runs on serotonin, just like our nervous systems do. And the nervous system of the lobster and of the human being is so similar that antidepressants work on lobsters. And it's part of my attempt to demonstrate that the idea of hierarchy has absolutely nothing to do with sociocultural construction, which it doesn't.